Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Friday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen, and Dennis Dick. We got a busy show today, folks. Holy cow. Three guests on the docket for today. First up, 8:15, we'll be joined by Anne-Marie Band. At 8:35, we'll be joined by Elliot Johnson from Evolve ETFs. At 9, we'll be joined by Sarah Potter, professional retail trader, president of YouCanTrade.com. And in between all of that, we have to talk about the chipwreck this morning. Thank you very much, Broadcom, for that guidance cut. We're going to talk about the implications of that and where the rotation will be throughout the rest of the market. If it's not going to be in chips, it has to go somewhere. So we've got ideas about that. Joel, what's the word here overnight?
We went from green to red here, down 6.25 handles. Basis the June contract, a pre-market high, 98.75. That's good level. That's just above Thursday's high. On the downside, pre-market low, 81.75. And that's just below the intraday low from yesterday. So tight, big range, but at relevant levels. Crude in the red by 13 cents at 52.14. Gold getting a big old pop on international turmoil, up $14.80, clearing 13.50 at 13.5850. Silver finally gets over 15 bucks, up 15.8 cents. And Bitcoin just quietly sneaking above 8,000 here, up $42.50. So let's bring in Triple D. Triple D, I thought you would still be out celebrating.
I'm actually a Pistons fan, so it's not really that exciting for me. But anyways, Toronto hasn't won a major championship in a long time, so happy for Canada, but I'm a Pistons fan, so I'm really not that excited about the Raptors win.
Okay, but what you're excited about is all the inefficiencies in the market today.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of them. It's going to be a lot of rotation here today. It's very interesting when you see, oh, wow, S&Ps are down. You know, somebody just come in and say, oh, we're down 5-6 handles here. Looks like it's going to be a weak open. It's always important to look under the hood. And what I will tell you is that the majority of today's losses are all chips. What's that mean? We'll probably see some rotation within tech itself even, because the indices are basically down just about enough for the chips. That means everything else as a whole should be flat. And some stocks are probably going to be higher because you're going to see some sympathy moves in some tech stocks that are trading down. So I would actually expect some non-tech to actually be stronger. It's not surprising you're seeing a stock like Disney get bid here this morning. So this is not one of those broad market sell-offs. This is going to be rotation. So expect certain stocks to actually rally on a day that we're down.
We just don't have these. I mean, very rarely do you have just, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater kind of days. It seems like
there's always some rotation into defensive and stuff. But I think, you know, this is going to be a day where you're going to see certain stocks even within tech. I mean, Facebook just went green. So there is going to be some rallying stocks because the Qs are hardly down. I mean, really, when you consider it, look under the hood and say, holy cow, we've got Broadcom down almost 10%. Huge. Every other chip stock just wrecked. This is chipwreck part two. We covered chipwreck a couple weeks ago. It's chipwreck part two. Intel's down 1.7%. AMD is trading down 2.87%. Nvidia is down 2.5%. Qualcomm's down significantly. Apple is down, obviously, due to the Broadcom news. So you're seeing a lot of stocks. Texas Instruments down $4. Was trading down $4. ADI, KLA Tencor. Just go across the board. Xilinx is getting rocked. A lot of stocks getting rocked. Indexes are not down enough to account for all of that. So what's that mean? You're going to see rotation within the index itself even. So those non-tech QQQ components I talk about, those are off of the beneficiary. But even a stock like Facebook, here it's nothing to do with chips, catching a bid. You know, maybe it's going to move. Twitter's trading in the green, in the red right now, but maybe it moves into something like that because it's nothing to do with chips. Amazon is not down very much anymore, only down 0.26%. When you look at the Qs trading down 0.56%, you might say, oh, Amazon would be a good short. Amazon has nothing to do with chips. So Amazon could be a candidate to actually show some relative strength here today. It's very important when you're trading, you know, coming in, you're saying, just look at, you know, and this is what a lot of newer traders and a lot of seasoned traders do wrong, is they just look at the indexes and they think, okay, we're down 6-7 handles, every stock's going to be lower. It's not going to be the case. It's going to be a lot of stocks higher today.
Okay, what about Walmart or Mickey D's? You throw them into that?
Those can catch a bit too. Walmart's been very relatively strong. I mean, Walmart's trading down the pre-market. I think it's an opportunity here. Mickey D's too, looking like it wants to break out. Mickey D's is not trading red here now. A couple odd lots traded red this morning, but it has moved back to the green here this morning too. So it's going to be a very interesting day. Very good day if you're able to identify those edges early. And I think the edge is looking at some, you know, defensive names are obvious plays, but even a play like Facebook. Facebook was down earlier, and if you were all over it, that's trading up a buck now. Maybe there's some individual news because that's up significantly here, but I am seeing a lot of stocks pop up in my up filter here now.
Good. Yeah, Facebook does have news. Mostly it's just about their cryptocurrency that they're doing, and then the backers that they've got for. They've got some big name backers for their internal crypto. So that's, I think that's the news on Facebook this morning.
Jump over here. We obviously, you know, are seeing actually other stocks rally here this morning too. But let's just jump over to the cause of the chipwreck this morning. Go into the fundamental details here for a second, because Broadcom's quarter was nothing short of a disaster. It's down 27 points here. The expected move, I believe, was 15, so almost down twice the expected move. Give us the results, Spencer, and why is it such a mess?
Yeah, the Q2 adjusted EPS, which is not even a relevant number today, they beat by 3 cents. Sales was a miss of $5.5 versus $5.69 billion. But the big story here is they cut their fiscal year sales guidance from $24.5 billion to $22.5 billion. And they directly blamed geopolitical uncertainties, that's a direct quote, as well, and I'm just reading now from what he said, well as the effects of export restrictions on one of our largest customers. I wonder who that could be.
Huawei. So, yeah, exactly. on this news, there was a lot of opportunity. The chips were a little slow to respond, but what was really, really slow to respond was Apple. Apple was trading higher for a good 3-4 minutes on the Broadcom news. Look at the Apple chart. It was absolutely shocking to me. I shorted it immediately, and I'm like waiting for it to go down and waiting for it to go down. I was like, what is going on with Apple? It did have a weird candle at the end of the day, and I didn't actually break it down, but it did, you know, a lot of stocks spiked. They're right near the close, and Apple really didn't participate in that spike, so that might be a little bit to do with it, but it just would not go down. I'm like, come on. You know, this is Broadcom, you know, talking, you know, with a really bad quarter here. You got to think it's going to bring Apple down. So I was able to short it 94.40. I wanted to add to it, like I initially, but it just wasn't even moving. It was like 94.40, 94.30. It traded up there for a good 5 minutes after the report. You want to talk about high frequency trading? They weren't very very fast on this one. Anyways, eventually it succumbed to what it should, the fundamental pressure from Broadcom. And now it's down $2. But holy cow, was that inefficient for a good 5 minutes, Joel? Apple trading up on Broadcom disappointment. It was crazy.
Intel or AMD hold up there a little bit?
They got hit faster. And I don't know. Maybe it was just one person that just decided they wanted to buy Intel or whatever, and they were just holding it up. Because like I was I went to hit a 37 bid, and I got 40. And I'm like, I could go to hit the 37 bit again, and I got 40. I'm like, well, somebody wants Apple. I don't know who, but the timing couldn't be worse. Anyways, that's just, you know, headline trading. Again, you know, looking, you know, there is opportunities in this market to trade headlines. Don't believe that, you know, you cannot be a headline trader and make money, because that Apple trade was easy money. Now, obviously, I've covered scalper blood. Me, I always cover too soon. I didn't hold it for $2, but you know, I'm sure there's some traders that did. So congratulations to those that did. That was just, you know, a no-brainer. So anyway, now Apple is down $2. Now, you know, it's priced in, so that inefficiency is now gone. But I don't know who's bidding Apple, you know, on a disappointment like Broadcom there.
Spinner's saying he wouldn't throw it in the chip sector. I mean,
Apple's not a chip, but if Broadcom is their major supplier. So when Broadcom disappoints like this is, Apple's going to trade lower.
I agree.
And it did. And I was already proven right, Spinner, because I made money. 94-40. So it's not even a matter of, you know, is this trade going to work? The trade's over. The trade's gone. 94-40 to 92 is a pretty nice trade for who I didn't hold it that long, like I said. But, I mean, Broadcom's a major supplier to Apple. There is definitely a relationship there. When Broadcom's down 27 points, Apple will usually be weak.
Three lows in a row here. I'm just going to do Apple real quick because I just pulled up the chart. And let's just call 193.50. That's kind of the middle of the last three lows. We're below that now. I'm going to use that as resistance for further support. 91.62 is your four-day low. But Broadcom, we looked at this. They got a boost because of an Apple contract. And then they filled that gap that they had in the market. And I was looking at, well, that a lot of times after these gap fills, they reverse. I had no idea, but that it would reverse like that. In a really interesting area, though, I see some of our YouTubers want to bid this. I would say I have to see what happens right here, right now at, you know, this 254 area. We are revisiting the lows of them. Well, it's actually 250.08. So I think I would kind of try and hold out for 250 if I wanted to purchase this or use a stop. You know, under 250, that was your low back on May 28th. Then a couple other lows at 51 even, 51.20. So there is some support in the lower 250 handle. This is where we're trading right now. I mean, long term, yeah, I could crack 250 and go to 240. But what about all the people who maybe took a flyer like on a 275 put or 270 put or 265 put that expired today? What do you want to do? You know, you're going to take some profits on this, you're going to roll them to the next week. So pre-market low, we'll use that as our bogey right now. And that is 253 and a quarter. I would not be sure to get into this area.
Yeah, I mean, this is a serious move down for Broadcom. Is, you know, the one thing, and let's just put this, you know, call a spade, the chips have been absolutely awful. The only one that's held up is AMD. I mean, you had a nice rally here in the last few days with Broadcom. It's all gone. So, I mean, every chip stock looks like a disaster zone. And NVIDIA, you know, is 144. I mean, you're 50 points off. I'm long NVIDIA in the long-term portfolio. Obviously a mistake. Micron is, you know, down another buck on this. Applied Materials. Every time the chips have rallied, it's been a selling opportunity in all of these things. So I don't know if there's bigger problems longer term, but this is just not the sector that has been benefiting really from any market strength. I mean, you look at a lot of stocks making new highs, and these stocks just continue to not participate when the market's going up, or very little participation, besides AMD. Like I said, AMD has been the source of strength. If I was buying any chip stock today, I'm probably looking at the weakness in AMD, because AMD had this 30. It's actually a nice setup in AMD here today. We're trading down a buck on the disappointing Broadcom news. We broke out from 30. We're going to retest that today. We're 30.50. If I was looking at any chip, it'd be AMD I'd be buying today. And that would be off that 30. The old trick, old resistance becomes new support. What do you think of that setup, Joel?
That's not bad. And it's also, I mean, I'm just looking at the resistance in this one. We mentioned it on Monday. Maybe we should just look at monthly charts here, because AMD topped out at 34.14. That was in September. Boom. What's the high of the move on Monday? 34.30. So excellent resistance now coming down to support. That 29.84 was the low on June 6th. We haven't hit that in the pre-market. I don't even know if you're going to get there. It looks like someone's backing up the truck here at, you know, 30, and not really letting it go through 30 and a quarter, 30.26, 30.20. Someone's making a little bit of a stand here with 37 cents off that low. So I don't think you're going to get a look at 30 today in that one.
50 cents. So you're getting a close look anyways. Maybe you want to jump in early at 30.50. But all I'm saying is this has been a source of relative strength. This has been best in breed for a while here. Is it long term? We don't know that. But in the short term, this is a stock that is loved. You've got your significant pullback here now. People who are saying, you know, this broke out from 30 and went to 34 in 3 days, I missed it. Well, you're getting a second chance here now. I actually might pull the trigger on AMD. Maybe not at 30.50, maybe at 30. Maybe I won't get it, but I'm going to take a shot if it gets down to 30.
Okay. All right. And just real quick, Western Digital has been finding a lot of support at 36 here. Your last two lows were right at the $36 area. So if you're leaning on that, then 36, you may have to look for a potential exit. Okay, 8:15, Spencer. Busy guest day.
So let's bring on our first guest of the day, Anne-Marie Band. She is a trader. She's an author. She runs thetradingbook.com. Anne-Marie, good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, where
are you?
Where are we talking to you from right now?
Always have to bring something new in here. Today, I am sitting...
Are you at Disney World? Looks like a monorail behind you.
By Disney. It's on 50.
Is that Disney? Disney's hot. She flew down to Disney. That's the monorail behind her, I think.
Is Disney gobbling up the world or what? Seriously. I'm actually on the balcony of our Park Ridge.
Oh, it's a balcony.
This is a balcony.
Gotcha. She can reach and touch that.
Yeah. I was hoping for the birds because there's a garden right beneath me, and all I'm hearing is trucks. So there we have it.
Okay, let's just get your overall market thoughts here. And, rallied back up right to, not all-time highs, but, close enough here. A lot of things going on. International, I tell you, oil tankers getting bombed, trade wars, doesn't matter. We are holding up here right now near the 2900. So what are your indicators? What are you looking for today or maybe next week? I know you're a little bit longer term to see if we go to 3,000 or back down to 2,800.
You know, it's interesting. I think where the market is, Brian Shannon said this to me years and years ago. He said, if the market doesn't scare you out, it'll wear you out. And right now, we're in the wear you out space if you're looking at the indices. Now, if you're a stock picker, there are things that are really going well in a lot of different places. But for those of us trading the indices like myself, we're sort of landlocked in this range, and it is a wait state that is completely annoying. And it's annoying because you can see things setting up on both sides. So choosing a direction almost becomes a binary event where you start thinking about, wow, how much risk do I want to take on in order to position myself well enough that I can be here in the mix. And so for me as a trader, I'm looking at this saying, all right, my long-term view is that we fade. However, if you look back at the last times that the Fed has come in and aggressively cut, not saying that they will, but if they do, that's going to give us a really significant bounce. It's going to blow me out of my bearish overall thought for the big market, but then I think that's going to fade anyway. So I can't stay short from a long-term coming into this perspective. Now, taking the flip side of that and going long, here's a question. What if the Fed says, wait, we really want to wait on data because we only have...
I think that's what's going to happen. How can they turn around from going four cuts, four rate hikes, and now all of a sudden we're cutting rates? I just think it's too much of an about face. I'm with you on that. I mean...
And you know what's interesting is if that's what they say, that's going to be one of the biggest surprises we've had in a very long time. And that is going to absolutely destroy this upside draft. So I really see us as having a little bit of a binary event here in terms of where we're going. And so that makes me very short term in the mix. And so I am looking at things like, well, if Disney's got a normal beta of 96 and it's been running off the rails so high, can I put on some sort of synthetic long / synthetic short, whatever, sitting and let it wait out? These are the wait state mechanics. So you really are trading Vega, you're trading Gamma, you're trading things that we don't normally, or I don't normally look at in order to position myself to gain anything. So that's really where we're sitting in my mind.
No, it's important because, you know, everyone's looking for the next big move. You know, it's there's got to move. We got to move. And what I've been noticing, of course, we got a rollover going this week. And Spinner pointed out we got a triple witch next week, with quad witch if you throw in the single stock futures. So there's a lot of jockeying going on. I mean, all the institutions that are long the June, they got to sell the June and buy the Sept and vice versa. And so you get the, you know, it's just winding up. We're really winding up here. So I agree. I mean, the level, this 2780 handle or 2880. I just wish we would get above, you know, 2900 and hold it, or break below, you know, 2880 and hold it. But it's just quite the yo-yo. But let's just talk two other commodities since we got you here. If crude is not going to, like, explode and rally with oil tankers going up in flames, what could ignite a bid here in the crude?
Exactly. And I really, you know, I read John Kemp's report that he brings out every day on fuel and commodities and energy. And he has been talking the last couple of weeks about hedge funds just trimming their exposure long because of global slowdown fears. And that is really what we're still playing. And if we take a look at something like a weekly chart or a monthly chart, we can see that we're within about $2 of holding supports that are fairly significant. So anywhere from 49 to 52, we've got ourselves again a wait state where you can go long on the bottom, close up on the top, or go short on the top and close down on the bottom. But you've got to be quick or you're going to be dead. And you can't buy a breakout and hold or sell the breakdown and hold because it's going to rip your face off. And that we're seeing that in oil. The big one that I'd like to really touch on is what's happening with gold.
I knew you. Yep. That was my next one. Go ahead, Anne.
Gold is a really, you know, gold, first of all, it came into 1347 and I had thought to myself, all right, this is a significant resistance zone. So pulling back here, if the exposure is so-so, we're going to drop all the way to 1300, 1315, and then we're going to break again. Instead, we come in to 1327, and then we start exploding. So the question is, why? And I suspect, since this is still a flight to safety event priced in dollars, and the Chinese aren't buying any more treasuries, and whatever, we've got this drift in a flight to safety, which I suspect is also a hedge against the Fed saying something that we expect or don't expect. I have no idea. But see, if the Fed, if we're expecting that the Fed doesn't raise rates, then the dollar should stay strong. If the dollar stays strong, then gold shouldn't be rallying. And so on and so forth. So there is a massive disconnect in the relationships that we're sitting here watching. But the big thing is pullbacks in gold are going to remain long. And if the pullbacks are deep, it's just going to make a better buy zone.
All right. I am going to ask you about one more stock, then we're going to talk about the summit right now.
Yeah.
And if they could put – they stole your symbol if you ever wanted to IPO.
Yeah.
Marie, I'm sorry, but BYND.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that. Oh, my gosh. I knew you were going to say that. This chart is really insane. It's really insane, and it's one of those hype charts. I think, you know, it's sort of the space where, yeah, absolutely. As we take a look at this, I think I cannot remember what happened that, what was the noise that brought it all the way down?
JP Morgan, one of the underwriters, downgraded it. And,
okay, because it got too hot. Right.
Yep.
So it really is tremendously hot. Everybody wants to eat pea protein. Listen, I've got some of this in my fridge. So the thing is, I really suspect that it'll hold these edges but I'm not sure it's going to make another high. So that, I think, is sort of a big thing to put out there and say at this point, because it does look so good, but I'm suspecting that 150 is going to have a little bit of trouble in general breaching. And so what it should do is come back to 100, and then potentially we'll see about having another rally that pushes it up.
Yeah, pair of highs on Tuesday and Wednesday right at that area. Also a good psychological level.
Exactly.
Also the 50% retracement at 155. Just real quickly, Anne-Marie, we are going to see you on Thursday at the Trading Summit. I'm excited to finally meet you in person. Could you just give us a little preview of what you're going to be talking about? Obviously, trading and in the trading room. Can we have a little sneak preview?
Well, what we are going to talk about, which I am so excited to finally get some time with you guys, what we are really going to talk about is mechanical flow. We do a lot of work behind the scenes, but when the bell rings, it's time to act. And a lot of us freeze up in that space. So what I'll be talking about is what I specifically do every single morning to prepare myself. We'll be coming into exact execution levels. We'll be watching them as we come into them, prepare for them, confirm the action, and move straight ahead. What it's going to be is a 1-2-3 stair step to move you from how do I go from all of this analysis to good, solid execution with risk as the primary thing that we watch and upside that we can participate in. I can hardly wait. I really can.
All right. To get an up-close and personal education in how Anne-Marie trades, you can, like we mentioned, see her at the Benzinga Trading Summit next week, Thursday, actually, bzprofit.com, promo code PMP50 will get you half off your ticket. Anne-Marie, thank you so much for joining us today, and we will see you on Thursday.
I'm going to get to see you.
My pleasure.
All right.
See you guys later. Bye. Take care.
All right, 8:27 now. Excuse me, Joel. What's the word here?
We're trying to triple D rally here a little bit. We just got up to 89 basis the June contract, so you are finding some buyers in here. AMD, I noticed, is just kind of holding above the pre-market low. AVGO is still holding its pre-market low.
Yeah, they're not rallying. They're not participating. But what is participating is the non-chips of tech. Facebook is now up $3. You're seeing a significant rally. Snapchat has just went green here. You're starting to see a lot of other tech stocks pop up here this morning and starting to not necessarily go green, but getting really close. Amazon is now only down $1. So exactly what we were saying is there's going to be rotation. I don't know if I tweeted that or not. I tweeted at one person saying expect rotation within tech because somebody asked me about it. I don't know if I said that on the show too, but this is what we're seeing is rotation within tech itself as well. There's going to be a lot of stocks that are stronger here today.
Just a quick question. I did not notice the day that American Airlines had yesterday. Wow, that stock is really taken off, been in the gutter. Straight up yesterday, this is a tough one. 33.32 was the high from yesterday. I'd like to see us, for the longs there, I assume you're long, like to see you get through that area. I see nothing really up until 34.19. There's a big area. But first things first, let's take care of that high from yesterday at 33.32. Did we get an upgrade in the airline stocks or something yesterday? I mean, it was a decent market day. I just didn't remember any specific news.
JP Morgan did have some commentary that the carriers could raise domestic fares. Okay. Yesterday.
Lower oil prices helping them out as well. Sure. Dennis, we're getting questions here about RH and Lulu, and they were both big fades yesterday off those big opens. So if you're interested in buying these and you put a good look at yesterday's low. Actually, for Lulu, you got a low from yesterday at 172.60. So it holds there. I think, maybe got a chance to go up. I just don't like the way.
It's an ugly candle. Caught people long yesterday. This is the type of chart that actually could be a short-term top. Because when they have good reports, they rally on them, and they open strong and go straight down, you've caught people who are, expecting that huge move. and they didn't get it. So anybody who bought that open, immediately underwater. I mean, look at the opening candle. Lulu's opens up around 182. Within 5 minutes, it's down at 177. So you got to be very, very, very careful, you know, chasing these things up and buying the gap ups. I never like buying a stock gap up because sometimes this happens. RH, same story, faded right from the opening tick. I do have a small overnight position in RH, but that's nothing. I'm beginning out at the open. But I think both of these stocks could have just put in some short-term tops.
Okay, 830 imbalances.
Small. No, I don't really see anything even jumping out at me of significance here. Just trying to see if there's anything. We had 830 a number there too, though. Give us the 830 data because the imbalances are small.
Retail sales, excluding autos, up 0.5% versus up 0.3%. Got a nice little pop off that up to over 2890 just briefly here in the S&P. So just slowly climbing our way back here from that overnight sell-off.
It's significant. Like I said, there's going to be some stocks that are going to go green here. Amazon's just kissing. It's trying to go green. What's Netflix doing? I would think it's going to get stronger too. Netflix is coming up here as well. I mean, the majority of these losses are chips. So really think about, take the chips out. These indexes are flat, if not higher. The S&P is probably higher without the chips today. So, and the oil is a source of strength here a little bit again. Well, no, oil leaked it back, so it's not. I'm trying to look at the sector. It hasn't really been determined yet. Disney is up here again. Had a beautiful day yesterday. I'm still long Disney. I think Spencer is as well. And the long-term portfolio, I'll be sticking with it. But you're going to see some stocks stronger here today. I just want to keep reiterating that.
Okay, and I mean, the one thing, I know you mentioned Netflix here. I mean, the old Netflix-Disney correlation yesterday, and actually Netflix has come off pretty hard here since getting up near 370, but it seems like, seems like Disney up, Netflix down, but we'll see how long that correlation holds up.
There is definitely a correlation there. So I will say that. But a lot of people believe that both of these products can live in harmony, and that might be the case. You know, if it's only $6-$7, maybe you got your Netflix and you got your Disney product. Do we know the name of the Disney product yet? Like what it's going to be, Spencer? Do we know what the name of it's going to be?
Yeah.
Did they give the name?
Yeah, Disney Plus, or unless I'm misremembering.
Disney Plus?
Yeah, Disney Plus. That's what it's called. It's premiering in November 12th.
Oh, it's coming soon. Nice.
Oh, yeah, and they've already got content lined up for it, like exclusive shows and stuff, so they're rolling.
Are they going to let us share accounts?
Well, they're not going to be able to stop you, so.
One Netflix account and five people are on it. They're going to let us do that?
Well, I'll get the three of us an account. How about that?
That's what I'm hoping. There. All right. Yeah, imbalances are small. Taiwan Semiconductor going to be weak. All your semis are going to be weak. TSM's down 2%. It's got 96,000 to sell. That stands out here this morning. But again, it's just going to be one of those rotation markets. Going to be an interesting market to trade.
Quick question here from Zach Brown about CRWD. I mean, there's only 2 days worth of data here, so I don't know. I'm going to have to let this one shake out.
I'm not sure about this.
Shake out a little bit more. It's had a nice move from 50. Let's call it. If it could come in near 60, I think it'd be interesting. 61.60 was yesterday's low, and that's about half of what you've so far the 2-day move. But Dennis, how much Chewy are you going to be buying on the IPO?
No, I don't trade any of these IPOs on the method. How do I control the risk? What's the symbol? What's it going to be?
Oh, gosh.
CHWY.
My basis prediction for the day is that this is going to be a Beyond Meat 2.0. Because
what do they do?
It's pet food. It's pet food.
Goodness. Anyways, these things can go anywhere. It's almost impossible to control the risk. Everybody, that's I'm gonna give it my 20-second rant before our guest. But everybody wants to get rich fast. That's what they look for. I mean, every newer trader, every person that's outside the market and comes and asks me, they always want to ask me about the craziest stock in the world, and that's what they want to try to trade. I will tell you, those are the hardest stocks to trade because you can't control the risk on them. There's no levels. There's nothing. It's just all air everywhere. So it can go anywhere. This could do anything. It's just going to be completely random. You know, the underwritten prices sometimes, you know, if a stock opens up and comes near the underwritten price, sometimes there's a trade there. But most of the time on day one, I stay completely away. Remember Fari Hamzi? He always said like the first 6 months he stays away. It's hard when you don't have any data. There's no like technical data on the thing yet. I mean, it can go anywhere. It's air everywhere. So hardest stocks to trade. I avoid it like the plague.
I would say, though, if you're hunting for stocks you think are culty, Chewy is the definition of a culty stock. Everybody, and this is anecdotal, but everybody I've ever spoken to about Chewy loves it. They're obsessed with it. They spend a lot of money with Chewy. And we all know people will spend irrationally when it comes to their pets. So I think the range today is going to be between $19 and $21 for the IPO price. But we'll find out in a couple hours. In any case, I want to bring on our second guest of the day. This is a new guest. And as I bring him on right now, Elliot Johnson is the Chief Investment Officer and Chief Operating Officer at Evolve ETFs. It's either the best day or the worst day to have him on. Elliot, first off, congratulations on the Raptors.
Oh, thanks very much. I really appreciate that. It's been a heck of a couple of weeks watching the playoffs so far, and it would have been nice for them to win at home, but nonetheless, we were excited. And everywhere around me in Toronto yesterday, about, I guess, only a few hours ago, was crawling with people, dancing on buses, standing on cars, just going absolutely crazy. And walking through downtown last night, you could feel the energy everywhere. All the bars were full, all the restaurants were full, and everybody is just delighted. We're overjoyed to have the win. So it's been a great day. I think most people are a little sleep deprived this morning. We're just going to power through.
Right. I was going to ask if you got any sleep and if the TSX is even going to open this morning.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's all automated these days. So I think the market opens whether we're awake or not. I don't know how many Canadians are going to be trading this morning, but it's amazing. I was here in 1992 and 93 to see the Blue Jays win, and it was exactly the same thing again last night. People just crawling in the streets everywhere, everybody celebrating. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I actually planned this back in October. I said, the Raptors are going to win. We're going to have to get a real Canadian on our show for the day. Dennis is a Detroit sports fan, so he doesn't quite count. So that's why I reached out to you. So, Elliot, let's start broad market here. Thoughts overall? We've talked a lot today about just the weakness in chips this morning and the rotation and where that could lead in other areas of the market today. But just thoughts overall on what you've observed for the past few days or few weeks.
Yeah, I think that we're back into a risk-on environment now. But, you know, the volatility remains, and this is it's a pretty fragile market overall at the moment, I think. And that's it's one of the things we notice in some of the areas where we trade, where some of our sectors are more volatile areas of the market. So when things go risk-off, they go risk-off much harder in some of those sectors. But when they go risk-on, things can move pretty fast. And, you know, from our perspective, when we look at the broader market and the broader macro view, you know, I think that there's a tendency for people to overemphasize some of the geopolitical risk in the short term, despite the fact that we still sort of seem to be in this environment where, you know, a tweet on the weekend can cause the markets to sell off, and then a tweet, you know, later in the week can cause them to rally back. And personally, I'm skeptical of any news that's out there that moves the broader market. And I think that we still are in a good place for investors. I think, you know, that in some ways, when you look at the chart, like just look at the US market broadly, right? The levels are not that much higher than they were at the end of 2017. So that's looking back over a year and a half on the, you know, the US market, and many other markets in the world are better valued right now. They've come back further. And so if you look at that and you think about it and you say, well, you know, what's happened in the past year and a half, fundamentally nothing other than continued global growth. And yet prices are at similar levels as they were back then. It seems to me that it's overall relatively positive. And, you know, we're not that concerned about downside risk. And to be honest with you, we're not, you know, we take a longer term outlook than just one day to the next. So, you know, I'm not really in a position to comment about, you know, whether the markets will be higher a week from now or tomorrow, but it's more a matter of looking at it broadly and just thinking that I think there's more upside than downside at the moment.
One of our chatters wants to ask you about Canadian telecom companies, and I thought there was only one, Rogers Communications, so I don't know if he's asking about that, or is there actually more than one?
Well, we have Rogers, there's also Bell Canada as well.
That's right.
You know, I'm not a telecom expert. I mean, you know, you look at Rogers and you see where they've come from, and you know, they've been in a sideways pattern for a while, but they're a solid company. I mean, the Canadian telecom business is very much a business that's sort of completely dominated by two giant companies. And so to the extent that you view data as an essential ingredient, as we do, you know, data is the new oil, all that kind of thing. You really have two suppliers for the entire Canadian market. And, you know, we view them as some of the safer picks, you know, among the blue chips here.
So you talked about having a longer term time horizon, Elliot, and a lot of Evolve's products are in the emerging areas of the market. You've got an innovation fund, you've got a cybersecurity fund, a cannabis fund, you're launching an esports fund. Which of those areas are you most excited about in terms of these sort of emerging sectors or these emerging industries?
Well, to a large degree, these are all variations on the same theme. So, you know, back to the comment that data is the new oil, we see technology disrupting a huge number of parts of society. So when we first launched our business, we launched the cybersecurity ETF that in 2018 was the best performing ETF in Canada. We also launched an automotive innovation fund, which was the first of its kind in the world. Didn't have quite as good performance because that's an industry that's being disrupted. So there's some losers as well as some winners as cars become more digital in terms of their self-driving technologies and battery operated, you know, electric drivetrain, those kinds of things. But it all comes down to the same concept that these are data-driven things that are happening. And our innovation fund kind of captures everything in one spot. So our innovation fund invests in six categories. So it has cyber and cars, but it also has cloud computing. It has robotics, social media, and genomics. And what ties all of those together, and our e-gaming ETF that we're launching next week is also in a similar theme. What ties all of this together is these are industries that are changing as a result of the ability today for large amounts of data to be analyzed and utilized in real time in ways that were never possible before. A lot of that happens in the cloud. That's where a lot of the AI or machine learning, whatever you want to call it, is taking place. But it's also a combination of cloud capability as well as much smarter on-device capability as well. So that's why the chips from companies like NVIDIA are so significant. And that's been one of the core holdings across our portfolios over the past year. Because, you know, the ability for you to build a device, whether it's a car or a factory robot or a surgical robot, that can analyze the space around itself, meaningfully understand what is in the world that it's interacting with, make some decisions autonomously on the device itself, and then report back to the cloud with other data for perhaps other kinds of decision making. This changes the ball game. At the moment, I think, you know, social media and the advertising and internet business is the place where we've seen these advances be most disruptive. If you look at the ad market, for example, by far the most valuable ad properties today in the world are Google and Facebook. And it's because effectively they are like the front page of your newspaper where there's an unlimited amount of space and that front page is customized for everybody that looks at it. It's all data that backs that up, right? You know, when you log on to those properties, you're seeing a different ad than your friend is and a different one from somebody else because they know more about you and they know what to serve you that satisfies you and satisfies the advertiser. That's a data-driven decision. And it only comes from aggregating a large amount of data. And so really that's the theme that gets us most excited. It's why we're building these products. We really think that investors are probably overweight core tech stocks, the FANG stocks, for example, and underweight some of these more disruptive sectors where there's just frankly better investment opportunities. Cybersecurity is a great example of that because not only has it had great performance, but it's also had better down capture than the NASDAQ, for example. There's very little overlap with the NASDAQ 100 in the cybersecurity space. And those are companies where it's a corporate spending story. Ultimately, there's no CEO on the planet that's going to cut back on their spending on firewalls and antivirus software because they have a bad quarter. They're going to be continuing to have those contracts with those companies. But those companies need this technology, need this data to keep pace, to keep innovating. And so that's a place where we say, you know, if you're an investor and you're looking for growth in your portfolio, you have to ask yourself what you're going to buy. And don't get me wrong, I love Apple. I love the FANG as a category. I think that those, they're going to continue to be the predominant companies over the next 10 years or so. But how big can they be? You know, can Apple double in size? Can Amazon double in size from here, from this point forward? Maybe, but it's going to be a much more difficult thing to do than some of these tech stocks that are in these more unique categories. And that's what we're trying to do. We're just trying to build a suite of products for investors to help them go where the world is going. And we think that these changes are things that, that everybody sees around them. Just one anecdote about the Raptors last night. The internet slowed to a crawl downtown after they won. It took ages even for text messages to get through because you had so many people rush out into the streets, grab their phones and start live streaming what was happening around them, taking pictures, posting them to social media, all that kind of thing. It's one of the reasons we're excited about 5G as a technology, because last night Toronto actually stress tested, back to the comment about telecoms, we stress tested the telecom network in Canada last night in that one moment. And it shows that while we think, you know, we live in a really, you know, modern first-rate city, and we do, we still need improved infrastructure. And so money's going to get spent on all these things. You know, this is just where the world is going. And I'm sure that this morning there are some engineers at Rogers and Bell who are having meetings trying to figure out how can they rebuild their system to handle a larger spike again in the future and provide better service for their customers.
We're talking with Elliot Johnson, the Chief Investment Officer and Chief Operating Officer at Evolve ETFs. Elliot, and a great point about the chips. You know, we were talking today about the chips getting hit. This is only one day. In the long term, they're going to be at the center of everything we do, that and the cloud, more or less. So, and you also mentioned the e-gaming ETF that's launching on Monday. We've talked about this, at length on our show over the course of, you know, as this theme has sort of, I guess, become a theme over the past year or so. But can you talk to us a little bit about what that will hold, or can you not wait till Monday?
No, absolutely. I can talk some about that. So the ticker for that is HERO. It's going to be listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange. It's an index of e-gaming companies. So a couple of the big names in the portfolio, for example, Nintendo, obviously everybody's heard of them. Tencent, which is a huge, you know, sort of the Google of China. They have a huge e-gaming business as well. Activision is in there. And then there are some companies where, you know, you might not know the name of the equity, but they own brands that people are aware of. So, you know, you're going to get exposure to Electronic Arts, and they own, you know, all of those, the sports gaming franchises, like the NBA franchise, for example. And so the idea here is this is an unbelievably bigger industry than most people who don't do gaming might realize. You know, I think a lot of people out there might remember playing video games in their youth, and now they don't do that anymore. And it is a totally different ballgame. So it used to be the case that you had, you know, you would go out and buy an expensive console and plug it into your television, and then you'd go to the video game store or the video game part of, you know, your Walmart or what have you, and buy a cartridge. And then in that model, the video game manufacturer has a chance to have a commercial interaction with you when you buy the console, when you buy the game, and then afterwards they might sell you some peripheries, like additional handsets or headsets or something like that. But that's really it. And that model has changed completely over the past 10 years, so much so that video game companies now have massive tournaments. They'll rent out huge sporting arenas to have people play against each other with spectators. There's a bunch of people who make a living playing video games online. So they'll play video games on YouTube all day long. I have a couple of boys in my household, and I can't believe how many hours a day they're willing to sit there and watch somebody else play a game. And to me, it seems weird. But then I think about, well, that's exactly what we did last night. I didn't play basketball, but I was sure excited. And so it's the same thing when my 11-year-old watches somebody playing Fortnite online. And sometimes he's playing it himself with his friends while he's watching somebody playing a different Fortnite game online at the same time. I don't know how he manages to keep it straight in his head, but somehow this makes sense to people who are really into that area. And what really I've noticed about it from a sort of commercial perspective is that the financial relationship between the game companies and the consumer is very much an ongoing relationship. So you have in-app purchases within the games You have the ability for there to be special events in the games. Fortnite is just such a wonderful business model. You know, there are certain things that you can only get if you're in the game at a certain time. And so, you know, my son will tell me, oh, I got to be home for 7 o'clock on Sunday because there's a special thing going on in that game. And only then will I be able to get the thing for my character that I really want to get. And that drives demand. I think the game companies are increasingly going after digital scarcity, trying to figure out ways in which they can make valuable property in the digital world that people who are invested in that game want to buy. And so the reason why we're building the ETF, again, it comes back to that same concept. Where is the world going? What are going to be some of the drivers of commerce going forward? And are there good ways for investors to invest in those categories? This is Canada's first e-gaming ETF. You know, we've had quite a few firsts here as we try to find a market for ourselves, building these products for investors. And we just think it's extremely exciting. It's an unbelievable space to take a look at. And we're, you know, when we do research into a new investment theme and we really start to dig deep and scratch the surface, it's just can be amazing when you see all the different ways in which this is a key part of what's happening out there that we may not have seen if we're not playing games ourselves. But now I really understand a lot better why, you know, people who are into games can get up in the morning and play them for hours because they're so compelling.
All right, Elliot Johnson is the CIO and COO of Evolve ETFs. Elliot, thanks for the time this morning, and get some sleep and maybe head over to that parade in a few days.
Thanks very much. Nice chatting with you.
All right, have a good one. All right, what do we got? 8:51 here now. Joel, what's the word here?
We're just bouncing around like a ping pong ball here. We got a little pop off the retail sales number, but we faded. So we're basically right at the level when we started the show. Mid-range, what do I have for mid-range on this session here? I think I'll use that as a little bit of a target on the upside, but mid-range comes in at like 90, right around 90, at 28.90. I don't know. They talk about some summer markets here. I don't know if we're going to have a summer market kind of day here, but right now, 28.90, that's a roadblock on the upside. Pre-market low, 28.81.75.
Dennis, do you want to share what your trade was yesterday that you didn't want to talk about, or was it?
It's Duluth.
It was Duluth. All right.
DLTH. I got stuck. I had it on my sheet, and I didn't realize it reported, and it was 15. So it closed, I think, the day at like $15, around 15. Maybe it's like 15.07. It was bid up at 15.50 after hours. I smacked the bid because it was like, oh, paying up 40 cents. I was like, oh, it reports. Oops. Like, you hit first, ask questions later, and I was like, oh. So, okay, well, I guess I'm going through the report. So it was 15.50 I was in from. I actually snuck out of a few hundred shares right before the report. Somebody went off for 15.08. I was like, okay, I'll just, you know, I'm getting out. It hasn't reported yet. This was in the pre-market, so I was able to get out of those and make the 42 cents. Then it reported, and it was disappointing. So I'm like, okay, obviously I'm not going to make bids out there or anything, so I wait for it to come in. But you could see it came down to 14.50, and you could see it stalling out. And the report wasn't that bad, and this stock has been in the doghouse, so I was like, eh. So anyways, I turned around, I covered some in the 1490s, and then I got the rest of it covered at 15. And it actually worked out to be pretty well because the thing blasted off the open up to 17. So covered in the pre-market, it was a good cover. It was reading the tea leaves correctly that it stalled out and it looked like it wanted to go higher, and that's what it did. Obviously pulled back and came back down after that. I mean, all these dogs, it seems like when they get these wicked spikes, they're just selling opportunity. So congratulations to whoever sold 17 a few minutes after the open, because it was a good selling opportunity. But again, when you're trading these stocks and you're trading these stocks on earnings and you've got a stock going through the report, the main thing is these thinner ones, man, 100 shares makes all the difference. You could like start, you know, you could panic and start buying, you know, bidding for 100 shares if you think the report's good, and you push the price right up on yourself. So I stay back. I don't put my orders out there because I don't want to impact the market at all. It's all about, you know, not impacting the market. I think Joe Saluzzi is going to talk about, you know, from an institutional perspective when we're out there on the 20th in June there at the Trade Summit, he's going to talk about reducing that price impact. Well, you know, even as a small day trader, when you have a small company that just reports, your orders will make a difference. So you got to be very careful not to impact the price and push the price away from you. So trying to reduce the price impact. If I was going to get orders out there, I would use a discretionary order where I was way outside the market. If I thought the price, if I thought for whatever reason it was a good report, I might like throw, you know, I'd say I'd buy anything under 15. I'm not going to bid 15 because then they, you know, the high frequency traders might push it right up on you. But maybe I'll put a 14 bid way outside the market with a buck of discretion. So if anybody offers 15, I'll automatically lift it. All different techniques involved when you're trading really thin stuff.
What did you notice? I mean, for the stall, was it just like some bids came in?
Came right in. Some offers were there and it came right in nicely, 14.50. But then, you know, it was stalling out. There's no bids. And then there was a couple bids forming. And I'm like, oh, this is stalling out. You could just tell the stall. And I'm like, okay. So now I'm like, I'm probably not going to be able to cover 14.50. So I probably, I can't remember how I did it, but I probably put some discretion. I probably went outside the market, put some discretion. But then some bids started coming up. When you see new bids coming up and they're not getting hit, okay, this could turn. I think that's when I started lifting some 14.90 offers. Maybe 14.95. I'm going from my memory, but okay. All like the 14.90s and 15. So as soon as I start seeing active bids come into the market and they're not hitting bids anymore, it's telling me there's a turn happening here, and I don't want to miss the offer. There was a big offer up at 15.30. I wouldn't want to miss that. So you know, you've got to really be aware of the active orders. It's not just all about book size. You can look and say what's on the book. Well, some stuff might have been on the book before the print. You know, that's old. That's old patent stuff that it, you know, maybe isn't really that active right at that point in time. So, if you see new orders coming in, that's new informed traders coming in that are saying this report is better than maybe where the pricing is right now. And they start bidding it up. That's new information coming in. Those orders are informed. Those orders are usually correct. So, you know, you've just got to read the tea leaves. Who's the active trader? Who's coming in here? And, you know, trying to read all that stuff. And I read it correctly because the stock exploded after the open. So if I would have held it, I'd have been in big trouble. So, but anyways, you know, sometimes you hold stocks through the report. Sometimes you make an oops, take something through the report. As a day trader, you've got to work those things out. As investors, you know, we hold through reports. I got 100 stocks in my investment portfolio. Hold through reports all the time. Not going to trade them during the report. But as a trader, you know, sometimes there's some action there and sometimes you get stuck with something through a report. Maybe sometimes you want to go through a report. Maybe you've got a feeling, but I don't usually intentionally take stuff through reports. It's usually an oops, I forgot that reported.
Okay, great. We also wanted to mention from the pre-market show, Red Robin, I think, unless we already did that.
No, we didn't. And this is getting to the point of a little bit ridiculousness for me, in my opinion. Okay, so it gets a huge pop yesterday on what I feel like is a little bit of bullying, like a little bit of Carl Icahn style. We're buy the stock, we'll get a position. Now we'll throw out this 40 number and say, oh yeah, we'll buy it there. But we put a couple, you know, small little things like due diligence just to make sure that we don't actually have to do it. That was my opinion. I don't think they're gonna buy this thing for 40. It's my opinion. I don't think they're really gonna buy it for 40. Some people obviously do. The market is speculating that they are. So the stock is now at 34. Karen Feinerman said she liked this on CNBC last night. When she said she bought this yesterday, saying that she thinks, you know, the 40 is a potential here and the thing's at $33, she's seeing an opportunity. The stock popped another dollar and a half on that. Got an upgrade this morning, got up to 35. I tried to short it last night. I did not get it. It's a little bit of a gutsy short because if it does come out and it's a real bid, you could lose 5 points here. But at a certain point in time, risk reward is to sell this because if it comes out and they actually is a real bid, I mean, if this gets up to 35, 36, your upside's, you know, if you're short the thing, your downside's 4 points. But if it comes out and they don't do the bid, the thing could be right back down 25, 26 with a company that's fundamentals were in the gutter before this happened. So if I was on this, I said this yesterday when it was right around this price, $33, I said I'd ring the register. I would still ring the register if I was long this thing right now, 34.26. So, I'm taking the opposite position, Karen Feinerman here. I think this is something that I don't think this $40 is going to materialize. Just my opinion.
Can't they say just sold to you? You know, but I guess the company has a poison pill, right? They don't want to sell out at 40, so it's not going to.
Well, they may not, but maybe they, you don't know. I mean, it's all, Like think about how Icon does it. You know, he does it so many times, and so many of these, you know, offers he's going to take these companies private never materialize. He comes in, he bullies it. He's like, I'll take the whole thing private. What was the one he kept doing it with, Joel? Remember back, he was going to buy it, take it private,
Clorox.
Clorox, you know, and he never did. So, you know, they do stuff like this. So is it, you know, are they really intentionally going to bid 40 for this thing? Maybe, but maybe not. We don't know what is really going on behind the scenes. They have an out because it's due diligence. So they could just say, okay, we did our due diligence and we don't want to do this. And we sold the stock. You know, they know when they come out and they say something like that, it's going to pump. These activists have, you know, a huge edge on the markets because they build the position, they come and announce the position, or they, you know, they get active in there and it pops. So that's the power that they have of being who they are. So I think, you know, the majority, if you were around for the ride here and buying this thing on the dip of 26, I think it was a gift yesterday at 33. I think it's a gift this morning, still 34. I think there's I think unless we really get a real 40 bid here, eventually it's going to stall out because you get to 36, 37, risk arbs are going to say, okay, well, 40 is as best as this thing's going to go. Unless you think there's another buyer. Unless they try to stir the pot and you think there's another buyer coming for this burger joint that was in, you know, the dumpster. It's been in the dumpster for a long time, just like looking, not the company, but the stock. You know, this was $90 back in 2015. Every rally has been a sell ever since then, really. You know, we got from 40 to 70. It was a selling opportunity. We got from 50 up to 65 again. Selling opportunity. We went from 27 to 34 yesterday. I believe it's another selling opportunity. So I don't think 40 is going to materialize, just my opinion.
All right. 901, I want to bring on our final guest of the day. She will also be at the trading summit next week, Sarah Potter. She is the founder of She Can Trade, the author of How to Trade Like a Pro. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you? I don't know if this says, I don't know what this says about me, but you've actually been on my list of people to get on this show for like a long time, and I never actually got you on the show. So I'm very happy that you're finally on because you've been on my to get list for like for like over a year.
Awesome. So. Well, hopefully we can come on more often. That would be great.
All right. So I mentioned you'll be at the summit next week. You've obviously a veteran of the markets here. Give us your overall thoughts on just what you've seen just from the market and also from the traders that you work with over the past few weeks and few months and sort of how people are approaching these markets.
Yeah, for sure. And so I trade every day and I trade live at my website at youcantrade.com. And from what I see in the market this week is completely different from what we saw last week, which is completely different from what we saw the week before. So the last 3 weeks we've had these huge swings. I'm sure you guys are very aware of that as well. Last week seeing such nice momentum in a lot of stocks to the upside, and then the week prior we were selling off. And this week is kind of slow and stuck, and it's in this transitional phase that doesn't really want to show us what direction things are going. So I don't know about you, but I have been finding that I have had to shorten the time that I'm in the market and really take advantage of a little bit more of the intraday moves that are going on, and especially trading a little bit more like 24-hour, 48-hour swing style trading. So I trade options. And so when I'm trading the options, sometimes I like to go out further in terms of my expiry. So I'll buy calls or puts that are like 4 weeks out. Right now, I'm using the same week or potentially the week out just because of the swings that are moving.
So I was going to ask you if you're primarily using options or straight equities or...
Yeah, so my style of trading is very much swing trading options, and I like to be in there fairly short term. And I think it really just depends what the market is bringing. I mean, I also trade futures. I just started dabbling in the micro E-minis. I don't know if you guys have tried those yet, but I put on a few in the live trading room this week, so those were kind of fun. But yeah, it's kind of whatever the market's providing, but I primarily trade options. I think it's just a nice way to be flexible. You know, you can place your trades, trade for an hour and then go away and go for a run or do some other things during the day and then come back to the market instead of when I'm trading futures and I feel like, oh my gosh, I have to be in front of the computer all the time and see what's going on. And then certainly for stocks, I have a lot of stock plays, but those are more long-term investing style strategies.
When are you trading? Is this, you know, obviously we're a pre-market show. We a lot of our activity is pre-market after hours. You're trading during the day?
Yeah, I'm all during the day. So there's a few of us that are trading live at youcantrade.com. I particularly like to trade at 11 o'clock. So my favorite time is between 11 and 12 every day. And I find it's really nice balance. So I get to see how the market opens. And between 9:30 and 10, I think the market behaves one way. And then you certainly see another move that usually occurs between usually around 10:30. And then I usually pick up the next move that's around 11 o'clock. And I just find it nice. So generally I'm exiting trades at the open and I'm entering trades by 11. And then by 12, I'm out doing something else for the rest of the day, which is pretty nice.
That's the way to do it right there. Trade for a couple of hours and then move on with your life.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So you do a lot of education on your sites and in your book. And I imagine you'll talk about this a little bit next week. But what is the biggest mistake you see your subscribers make on a routine basis?
The biggest mistake that everyone never wants to hear, but I always think it's so important to hear, you're not going to make $1 million tomorrow. Everybody wants to trade. And it's so funny, right? Like, so I did a TEDx talk. I don't know if you guys have Googled it, but in the TEDx talk, I talk about something very similar. When we talk about money and trading in particular, everyone always thinks it's this high risk, tons of money, and it's happening really fast. You got to get in now. And I think it's actually quite the opposite. People who trade professionally, it's more of a system, a routine, and it's not as exciting because you're just following the steps of which you have put out for yourself. So while you can be very successful in the market, it's an amazing place to make money. And we all have the same access to all the same information as everyone else, which is fantastic. You need to be following a plan. And I know everybody says that, follow your trading plan. But what does that really look like? I think what it means is that you're making rational decisions day in and day out. Whether or not the trades you're placing really are the best trades to be placing, is the timing correct? And are you able to say, actually, no, it's not very good to place a trade right now, and I'm going to wait another hour and see how that works out for me and then place a trade. And vice versa, when you're in trades and you have profit, sometimes having profitable trades is actually challenging because once you start making some money, how do you make sure you want to make, you know, you've made enough and you really let that run versus one day you have this fantastic profit and then you wake up the next day and you look at your unrealized P&L and you're like, oh man, it's all gone, right? So making those decisions, following the plan, but bringing it down into more measurable steps so that you can actually execute decisions that are based in rational thought instead of this emotional, crazy decision about, you know, I'm going to make it big and I'm going to make it all in one day.
So what do you base your trades on? Are you technical? Are you fundamental? What kind of charts do you look at? What kind of time frames do you look at?
Yeah, so at the Benzinga Trading Summit too, I'm going to trade live. So everybody will see my charts and hopefully we can actually play some trades while I'm out doing that with everybody. So if you guys are coming to the summit, come watch me trade and I'll definitely show you some more of that. I primarily base all of my trades in technical analysis and charting. Although my charts are pretty straightforward, it's not about being overly complicated with tons of indicators for me. It's pretty simple. I believe that everybody has the skill set, the ability to place trades, to make decisions themselves. So that's really where my root of it is. I look at multiple time frames. I look at a weekly, a daily, a 60-minute, and a 5-minute chart. And from the information that I'm seeing there, then I usually take it into the options chain. And what I'm generally looking for is support or evidence that lines up between what I'm seeing in the options chain, like volume, open interest, what the actual bid and ask is, and then what I'm seeing in the chart. So I kind of just do a combination, but I'd say I'm definitely probably a technical trader at the heart of it.
And candlesticks, bar charts, time frames, stochastics, relative strength, daily highs and lows, what are your main mainstays?
So candlesticks, definitely looking for trends in, as I said, on the multiple time frames, the weekly, the daily, 60-minute and 5-minute chart. So I'm always looking at all four of those with every stock that I'm looking at. I use exponential moving averages generally on all of those charts as well. I don't, in terms of internals, yeah, I mean, they're there and I use them, but they're not like a crucial piece to my trading. So stochastics, you know, RSI, I'll take a look at ticks, VIX and things like that. But to me, it's about the charts and about the trend and understanding that in the market, I'm a retail trader. Everyone else here is a retail trader. And we're in a pond with some really big fish, right? And my plan when I'm placing trades is to recognize that I'm here with all the big fish. And I'm not going to try to eat any big fish. I want to swim in the same direction that those guys are going in. And so that's really how I'm placing trades. I'm not trying to guess where the market's going to move next. I'm placing trades in the direction the market is currently moving. And what I will do is shorten or lengthen the time that I'm placing trades based on how long I think that market is going to move in that direction.
You've got some fans in our YouTube chat here, Sarah, and I want to mention that Sarah Potter will be in both locations at the summit next week. She'll be doing a presentation on the main stage, but she'll also be in the Traders Lounge doing a more detailed hands-on workshop. So if you want to see her at the Traders Lounge, get your ticket to that. Otherwise, she'll be on the main stage for a few minutes next Thursday at the Benzinga Trading Summit. Sarah Potter, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to finally talk to you, and I'll see you in a few days. See you on Thursday.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to trading with everybody. We'll see you then.
All right. Have a good one, Sarah. All right. 9:10, Joel. I think we're done for the day. Do you final thoughts on this market?
Range bound trading here. We've made a couple attempts here to clear mid-range on the day. This is basis the June contract. 28.90 and a quarter. That's mid-range. We bumped up there a few times. So above that, I expect a test of the pre-market high at 98.75. On the downside, all kinds of congestion here in the lower 28.80 handle. Thursday's intraday low, a close from Wednesday. So there's there's your support. So I don't know. Finally, make it just like a summer range-bound day. That's
all right. I'm feeling more convicted now on my Chewy call. This is going to double today. Wherever the IPO at, they're going to double. This is culty. People love their pets. So I'm feeling more convicted now than I was a half hour ago. But that'll be it for today's show. Thanks to everyone who joined us both on YouTube and in our other chat, premarket.benzinga.com. Thanks to all of today's guests, Sarah Potter. I can't remember. It's been so long. Elliot Johnson and Anne-Marie Band. If you missed any part of today's show, catch our podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Podcasts. As we have mentioned several times today, the Benzinga Trading Summit Thursday, bzprofit.com, promo code PMP50, all caps, PMP50, will get you 50% off your ticket to either the main stage or to the Traders Lounge, where you'll get more hands-on learning from that. That's it for today's show. Please remember, all the information then is for informational purposes only, not meant to be investing advice. Hope you all have a good weekend. Happy Father's Day to all you fathers out there. We'll be back with you on Monday.